What does it take to become a successful property investor? You know, one that builds a large property portfolio rather than selling up after a few years, like what happens to probably half of those who get involved in property. What does it take to be part of the 1% of property investors who builds a portfolio of 6 or more properties? Now, that was a question asked to me recently by Aaron Christie Davies for his Australian Property Investor podcast. And I think I know the answer to this because an audit of our clients at Metropole showed that our clients are 7.3 times more likely to own 6 or more properties than the average Australian property investor. And I believe Aaron elicited some great insights from me by asking the right type of questions. So I asked permission to replay his interview with me to you, my audience of my podcast. So whether you're a beginner in the game of property or well on your way to being in that top 1% of investors, I'm sure you'll get some benefit. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
G'day everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Australian Property Investment Podcast. My name is Aaron Christie David, founder of Fertilia Wealth and mortgage broker to investors. And each episode, we like to bring in an expert professional in their field. And today's guest is absolutely that and more. And I'm super excited to have joining us on this episode is none other than Mr. Michael Yardney from Metropole. G'day, Michael. How are you doing?
Hello, Aaron. Thanks for having me on.
Mate, thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. I think we were chatting before about being locked down in Melbourne, but mate, that hasn't dampened your spirits at all. In fact, you sound more bubbly than ever, which is you in a nutshell, I'm guessing.
I guess you've got to learn to control the bits of your life you can control. And I've actually stopped worrying about those bits I can't control because it only gets me down if I think about those.
I love it. That's the attitude, right? That's probably why, mate, you and your business has stood the test of time. And that's what I'd ideally love to have a chat about today. And I've had the privilege of speaking to you in the past. And one thing that's really struck me is you're someone that keeps giving. You're giving content, you're giving your time, you're giving your IP, you're building your business. And it feels like it's come from such a great place that you're not here to sell, you're here to inform, you're here to educate and see investors going to do some great and magical things. And I think that's in an industry where our respective industries where selling can often be the winner, giving is far more greater. Is that fair?
I think it's a great way of looking at it, but it came to me, I guess, about 30 years ago when I was at a very down time in my life. I went through a divorce and what I nicely called my asset reallocation program. and a friend of mine said, Michael, if you help other people achieve what they want to in life, you're going to get everything that you want in life as well. And so that has been my attitude. And of course, there's a motive behind it. I'd like to get more Australians financially free, more Australians financially literate because they're not, because I'd rather build Australia and our community to be wealthier rather than pull us down to the common denominator. Mm. Let's drag everybody up to the top.
Absolutely. It's such a sentiment that I resonate with as well, because we're all about helping investors play a bigger game, play at a higher intensity, higher frequency for people. And that comes off investing in yourself. That comes off being around the right partners, good quality, high caliber partners that have your best intentions, clients' best intentions at heart. Naturally, relationships will then lead to doing business or doing some work together. It's a win-win. They win because they've bought a great property, they're succeeding in life, and we get to win that we've been able to help and serve more Aussies as well, isn't it?
Sure, that's right. Yeah.
Excellent, mate. So tell me a bit of a journey, because I know you've had a great time in Australian property and investing as well. And I understand that your journey goes back, and I don't want to kind of show your age, mate, but your journey goes back to investing in the 70s, from what I understand.
That's right, yes. Well, I guess that does show my age.
You're a wee kid.
I've learned a lot along the way. So I bought my first property in the early 70s, but I came from a poor background. My parents were migrants. I came to Australia at the age of 3, so I guess I was a migrant too. Mm. And my parents' friends were wealthier. My friends' parents were wealthy. They were the same people. So, but they had businesses. My parents didn't. My father wouldn't take a risk on that. He wanted the security, so to speak, of it being an employee. My friend's parents had properties. They invested in real estate. In fact, they had a car I was 8, 9, 10, my parents didn't have a car. Uh-huh. They went on holidays. And so I saw what they did and I saw what my parents did. And my parents were very good to me and taught me a lot of great things, but they didn't teach me really good money messages, lessons. And I thought when I was young, I wanted to be a real estate agent because I thought they're the people that make the money. They drove the fancy cars and they dealt in all these big properties.
And nothing's how wrong changed I was, since the 70s to now. But
wrong I was. Having said that, I have got a real estate license and we've got licensed estate agencies in Sydney, Brisbane and Melbourne, but we've actually never sold property. We've actually gone on the other side, which wasn't around in those days, and we help people buy property.
Nice.
So I bought my first property at age 8. I was in my early 20s. Aaron, I had done part-time work. I'd worked during the holidays, school holidays, uni holidays, and saved, I think, $1,000, and my parents saved $1,000, and we went halves in a property in Larch Street, South Caulfield, and paid $18,000.
It's incredible.
So we took a $16,000 loan for 30 years and had no idea how we were going to pay it off. But the exciting thing was we got $12 a week rent.
That's incredible.
Now, that property was great timing. I actually bought in the same suburb where I went to school, two streets behind where my mother went shopping, made all the typical mistakes. That's all I knew. There wasn't all the ways of finding out about property in those days, Aaron. Yeah. So what ended up happening was the Labor government came into Australian politics. It came into power. Inflation went up. The value of my property went up so much. And no one told me. I thought, hey, this is great. Look, I could borrow again. And I did. So I used the equity from that to buy my next property. And when I got married, I sold that first property to my parents. I sold my half, paid $18,000, sold my half for $32,000.
Lovely.
And then I bought it back from my mother, Pam, my current wife, and I bought it in the 90s for $250,000. And about 15 years ago, we pulled down the old house and built two townhouses. So my first property, $18,000, is worth probably about $2.5 million today, Aaron.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Obviously, it's time in the market. And you hear this a lot, which is time in the market versus time in the market. From that, are you a firm believer that you've got to stay the course and buy and hold? Or what's been your intention building your own portfolio?
Well, when I first started, I thought you had to time the market because that's what people said. Be fearful when others are greedy, be greedy when others are fearful, buy when there's blood in the streets. And so I learned a lot of hard lessons along the way. And I realized that actually it's wrong and you can't and it's too difficult to time the market. And so the right time to buy, in my opinion, is when your finance is right, when you've got a secure job, especially if you know what you're wanting to achieve. So I didn't start off knowing what I wanted. I didn't have a plan. I didn't have a strategy other than I knew I wanted to be rich and I wanted to be like those other wealthy property owners. But I've learned over time that compounding of good decisions, financial decisions, and owning the right property, time leverage works really well. But if you own the wrong property, it actually works in reverse. So on balance, it's important, but there's lots of other factors as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's commonly what they call the dumb tax, for example. So it's not exactly what you buy, but it's also what you don't buy as well, that can kind of make or break you, isn't it?
Sure.
Yeah, perfect. So take me on a journey. So you've gone on buying properties personally, and now you've got a business, Metropole, which kind of launched in, I'm going to say, around 2000?
The original Metropole Properties goes way back to 1979. It was not my first company, but it was a family company that I set up at the time. But the Metropole that deals with the public was around the year 2000. I was involved in property renovations in the 80s, property development. I got into some really brave developments in my 30s and 40s. I thought I was smart. One of the worst things that a beginning investor can do is get it right first time. You think you're smarter than you are. And the cycle taught me some interesting lessons. I managed to live through the recession we had to have in the early 90s when the value of I bought some big commercial properties, got involved in some large commercial developments. And I started that cycle with a 30% loan equity, 70% loan to value ratio, and the property values dropped that much that I had no equity at all. And the bank said, sell. And I said, who to? No one's buying commercial properties at the moment. I had the cash flow to get through. So I actually learned some lessons along the way about property development, property investment, cash flow management. And then when I was reestablishing myself after my divorce in the middle 90s, I started helping others with development project management. So I was doing property developments, but there was only so much I could do and there weren't other people doing it. So we were starting to buy sites with development approval or get development approval. And there weren't buyer's agents in those days. There was one or two just starting. So I started to help people buy properties to keep, not to trade, to keep developments. We put syndicates of developers together, clients we put together, and you'd own unit one and I'd own unit, well, actually I wasn't involved, but I never got involved working with clients, but somebody else had owned unit two and the other one had owned unit three, and they'd get together and do the whole lot and it worked nicely. But then I suddenly realized, well, not everyone can afford to or wants to be a developer. So we started our buyer's agency business in the early 2000s. We started property management in 2001, 2002. My wife Pam did. We now look after over $2 billion worth of assets under property management. Excellent. And we've bought probably getting close to $5 billion worth of investments for clients. So it's given us a great database to see what works, what doesn't work, how it works. It's going gangbusters despite COVID, Aaron.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, COVID, it's just taken the property market to a whole new level, hasn't it? But one thing you're probably looking back and when you say, well, you can see all the clients that you've enabled and assisted throughout that time, there's going to be some standout clients, the ones that have gone on to build maybe some really good portfolios or high-performing portfolios, and maybe the ones that started out but lost some momentum along the way and for whatever reason haven't continued on when they've probably had potential to kick on. So I want to kind of lift the hood on that scenario to go, when you're looking at your client base and some of the people that you've worked with, the ones that have gone to become exceptional performers, and I'm not talking about quantity portfolios, so it's not about the number of properties, but it's about the quality of their portfolio versus the ones that kind of started and had the same game plan but kind of lost, for whatever reason, lost that momentum. Can you kind of put a finger on what's happened there from your perspective?
Sure. I used to think it was related to the knowledge that you had or the amount of money that you had. But somewhere along the way, probably 20 years ago, I recognized that the difference between successful investors, successful business people, successful entrepreneurs, and the average is actually their mindset. And so I started studying the psychology of success, and I recognized that you do need a particular mindset to be successful in property or in anything in life. So some people are just not made to be property investors. They buy a property and they worry and they're concerned and they argue about it. Spend 2 hours arguing about a $200 electricity bill when they should have been doing other things instead.
There we go. Yeah. I'm like, you missed the point. If it's going to break you back over $200, you've missed the point. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. They've forgotten the big picture. Or, hey, I'm paying too much land tax.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it hurts, but it's a wealth tax. I agree. On the other hand, you're paying land tax or you're paying tax because you're making money. It's a part of doing business. So one of the big differences you asked about the successful people is actually the way they think. Mm. Now, it's interesting. You can get to a particular level, but not many people get to the next level. So we actually help our clients become successful. And our results were audited a couple of years ago. I think it was last year when we found that we know the statistic that there's 20-odd thousand Australians who own six or more properties. Mm. We know the percentage of those who own them. And our clients were 7.3 times more likely than the average investor to own six or more properties. Wow. So I was very proud of those results. Now, they're skewed by the fact that we've got a lot of beginning investors starting two who've only got one or two, but we've managed the assets for and look after and advise a whole lot of very successful investors. And part of that's come around by putting a strategic plan together. So while there's lots of buyer's agents out there, buyer's agency is only a really small part of our business. We believe our job is to help our clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth. So to do that, we have a financial planning arm, We have a wealth advisory arm. We have property buyers agency, renovations, development, property management, and even business advisory, Aaron. But it all starts by putting a plan together. You actually have to know where you're heading. Last week, I got an email from a journalist. Can I speak to you about it? Yeah, sure. Of course, I love being in the media. If you had $500,000, where would you invest? And if you had $1 million, where would you invest? Because that's the stories they want to know.
Absolutely.
And that's the stories that the clients come and ask us about, Aaron.
Yeah.
And I disappointed him because I didn't tell him. Not because I don't know where to, because what suits me as an investment doesn't suit you, Aaron, who's who I know already a successful investor, and it doesn't suit a beginner. They're different needs. Mm. So I said, no, I'm not going to tell you that. What I'm going to say is invest in your knowledge and get a good team around you, a good finance strategist, because that makes such a huge difference, a good tax accountant, a good property strategist, and build a plan, because all our clients start by having a plan of where they want to go, what they want to achieve. Is it realistic in their timeframes? Are they going to stop and have a baby in a couple of years and therefore their cash flow is going to change? So what we do is build a plan that isn't actually using our financial planning arm. It's not controlled by ASIC, but if they were to look at it, they'd, I think, be very happy with the robustness of it.
Yep.
And then we pull in a number of different consultants depending upon their needs, whether it's asset protection, structuring, planning, it's finance, et cetera. And only after they've got a plan, then will we make a recommendation of where to go. And it makes no difference to us whether it's Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane. We have pretty strict criteria about property, and I bet you're going to ask me about that. But it all starts by putting a plan together and then bringing your future to the present, I guess, and doing something about it.
Yeah. And it's almost the unsexy part of investing, which is a boring, let's get a strategy, let's get a plan in place. And people just want to go, let's just buy a property. I've got this momentum. I've got this, I've got the gusto about it. And it feels like that's where they get sold, the next hotspot, for example. And again, probably why you let the journo down is because you don't want to give away a hotspot. And that's what the underlying message in that article is. It's kind of, here's where to buy and spruik in particular area, as opposed to, hang on, but are you buying for capital growth? Are you buying for cash flow? Sure. Are you buying for development upside, for example? And you're exactly right. Like, what suits one person is going to suit another investor, depending on where they are in their life cycle.
Exactly right. And over time, you change and you grow and you mature. So we help our clients fix their problems, because we see so many people who come in who bought a dud property, made a mistake, and they're not sure should they sell or shouldn't they. We actually help them avoid mistakes along the way, because we've made them all. Aaron, I've made them all. I shouldn't have sold that first property that I bought back. I've learned difficultly a lot of mistakes along the way. So most of my mistakes have been self-inflicted. So we help our clients avoid problems, and we help them improve their returns by not fighting the big trends. So now, we didn't buy in mining towns. We didn't buy in Hobart or the latest hotspots. We are very fussy about what we do, because we actually recommend to buy in locations that have always worked rather than what works now. Because again, if you take a long-term view, well, see, I guess the average Australian worries about what they're going to do on the weekend. A smart investor will think about what they're going to do in a year or two. But the multi-millionaires, they think about what they're going to do 10, 20 years down the track, decades away. So that's the sort of view we take rather than the ups and downs.
Yeah. And I guess it's playing the long game. And that's, you call it delayed gratification, for example. But the long game is, it's hard, I guess, for us to see so far in advance to go, well, what can this be doing 10 years? Because I want to call it buy 10 properties in 10 years, which I've seen very few investors actually go on to achieve.
So hard today, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not an impossible.
Almost, I agree with you.
Yeah.
That's the other big thing that's changed. The strategy we were using, like living off equity and borrowing to buy more properties, that changed after the global financial crisis. Being in finance, you know that property is a game of finance with some houses thrown in the middle.
Correct.
So you can't buy 10 properties in 10 minutes anymore, can you?
No, you can't. And I guess the other part is the bank's policies have changed and they've dialed them up. I mean, shading rental income was a foreign concept. Go back 4 years ago, it was never a concept. Factoring credit cards or whatever it is, or living expenses, was not a concept a few years ago. So I always feel like lending is where it is now. It's never going to roll back to what it was in the glory days. This is set a new norm. So we've got to play within these bounds and go, it's going to continue to get more restricted as more Australians start to kind of edge their way into investing in property, and some will do well and others will get their hearts broken as well. So how do we position our clients, our respective clients, to go, well, let's put you in the top tier of investors, which means it's the message that we're projecting onto them, because I feel like some people project no. So some advisors will say, I don't think that's a smart idea. And like, who are we to project our own beliefs onto a client as well? I think that they need to kind of have a bit of a plan under our leadership as well. Is that fair, that your experience has lent itself to that?
Property investment is simple, but it's not easy. And that's not a play on words. It's simple because others have done it. There is a formula. There is a framework for those who are successful. But it's not easy because fear and greed get in the way. Emotion gets in the way. We all think we're rational, but we're not rational about money. And then there's the media that's continuously giving us all the negative stuff. There's the perennial doomsayers, the negative Nellies who scare people off. So it's actually hard to stay in. Aaron, one of the interesting things I've noticed this year is that property investors in Sydney in particular, so we manage thousands of properties for clients, and they're currently selling up. Because the market's doing well. And as soon as somebody in our property management department hears the landlord says, oh, can I get an agent through? They're wanting to inspect it. I'm thinking of selling my property. They get them to speak to one of their property managers. And their properties are going up $1,000 a day in Sydney. Why are they selling? Yeah. So you've got to take them back to the original plan. What was the intention of it? But they get caught up with the hype. Some are wanting to cash in. Others are scared because of the doomsayers of what may happen. So I'll get out now. People, it's hard to keep going. It's boring. My strategy is too boring for many people. It's actually to buy a good property when you can afford to, in the right location, add value over time, and just let it keep working. And I say to my clients, if you want excitement, go bungee jumping, go trail bike riding. Property investment's not meant to be exciting, but they want the buying and the selling and the exciting bits, Aaron.
Yeah, I agree. And speaking of money, and I mean, we'll go back a step to where you spoke about the psychology of success, and then that's largely linked to people's relationship with money. When I've read a lot of your updates on your blogs are killer content, by the way, and even the books that you've produced, one of the books actually on my bookshelf right behind me, but you speak about rich habits, poor habits, for example. Mm. You speak about money as a mindset and, I guess, your relationship to money. Why has that become such an important message for you, as opposed to, hey, here's the principles of buying and building a property portfolio. And I guess you've gone on a slight, I won't say tangent, but you've got a certain direction about the importance of a quality relationship to mastering money, as opposed to money kind of mastering us.
Gee, that's a nice play on words. But the answer really is because, as I said earlier on, the difference between successful property investors, business people, entrepreneurs is their psychology, the way they think. Successful people think in a different way was first written by Wallace Wattles, and T. Harv Eker in his great book, Secrets of the Millionaire Mind, put it slightly better. And he said, your thoughts lead to your feelings lead to your actions, and your actions lead to your results. So your outside world is a reflection of your inside world, your thinking, the thinking that leads to your feelings, that makes you make decisions. And so for many years, I've been mentoring people. I've almost cut back that mentorship program, but over 15 odd years, I mentored about 3,000 people, and I became good friends with Tom Corley in the United States, who did a study of wealthy people, his Rich Habits, Poor Habits study. And we wrote a book called Rich Habits, Poor Habits. And I'm very proud of that because that's been translated into 5 foreign languages, which shows that these needs, these thoughts, these ideas, the concepts are necessary all over the world. And it's an international bestseller and a bestseller here. Interestingly, last year alone, I was amazed. We sold 38,000 copies in Taiwan of Rich Habits, Poor Habits. And the population is only about the double the size of Australia. But there's people wanting to learn, wanting to aspiring to grow. And so what I learned was I can help my clients and those who are not my clients, the people who listen to my podcast, the Michael Yardley podcast, or read my property update blog, I can help them more by thinking like wealthy people, like the rich people, because all this is happening at an unconscious level. 80% of what you do every day is the same as what you did before. And it's because of things you heard, things you saw, things you experienced as a child from your parents. So I didn't experience good habits from my parents, money habits, good habits in other areas. Interesting, my sister became very much like my parents. They're your early mentors. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But I was angry. I was cross. I was unhappy that we were poor. So I tried to do things differently. Aaron, unfortunately, if your motivation to get rich is because you're angry or because you feel insecure, it doesn't help. So I had to learn those lessons the hard way by chasing money for the wrong reasons early on. Mm. But I did learn by doing those sort of things that the way you think about money and the way you think about people who are wealthy is a very important factor in how successful you're going to be.
I absolutely agree with you. I hear everything you're saying there as well. And one of the things that I've really taken away from what you're saying is, and it's investing in property has a very similar pathway to building a business and being self-employed. And when I talk to a lot of our property investor clients, I'm like, you have to see your portfolio through the eyes of being a business owner. So looking at it, making good quality decisions around the team that you're going to bring on the journey with you as well. But also, I guess, having that really clear game plan about your KPIs, about your numbers, about your performance and what you can do to kind of dial that up, for example, as well. You've spoken about that, I think, in your from your experience as well, about seeing yourself as an entrepreneur, as a business owner for your portfolio. So when you're assisting investors, what's some of the other guidance or what's some of the insights that you have given them as well that have, in your mentorship that you've kind of spoken about, that have been nuggets of wisdom that they've gone on to go, hey, that was a little bit of a game changer, or that has kind of set me on this particular path as well?
Well, what you said a moment ago about treating your property as a business is important. So what a business owner does is review the performance. So we provide our clients with an annual portfolio review. Okay. And the question is, how's it going? How did you expect that property to perform? Why is it not working at the moment? Is it because it's just a wrong time in the cycle? Is it because you could improve it? Is it because it didn't work right? It wasn't the right investment. You bought wrong. And so therefore, you've got that difficult discussion with them because they're emotionally involved. Now, to be fair, most of those that haven't bought the right property, in fact, almost all of them, ones who bought the property themselves before they became clients of ours. And so you've got to do the numbers and figures and see, well, there's actually a cost in getting out. Hopefully there's a bit of capital gains tax because it has gone up a little bit in value. There's the selling cost, there's the buying costs. But what's the opportunity cost if you don't move ahead? So I guess the thing is to get a good team around you and allow your team to objectively look at your business. I think the other important thing is to begin with the end in mind. And that's why we start with the strategy and get the right ownership structures up front. When people are starting off, sometimes it doesn't make sense to own properties in a family trust or in a company, and I'm not giving financial advice, an SMSF, because that needs specific advice. Doesn't always make sense up front, but 20, 30, 40 years down the track, and a lot of our clients have been investing for that long, they wish they'd bought it in a different entity. So begin with the end in mind. And one of the big lessons I try to teach them is if you're the smartest person in your team, you're in trouble. We've got 25 million property experts in Australia. Everyone knows something about property. They've invested in it. They've read my blogs. They've listened to your podcast. So sometimes you've got to change their biases. There's that confirmation bias that they look for something that they already have made their mind up about. And this is intelligent people, we're not smart, we're not rational when it comes to money.
That's such a fitting way to kind of wrap up our chat, because investing in property can be highly, highly emotional. You call it the fear of missing out, or once you're in and then there's an issue that goes wrong with the tenants, one partner's like, this is why we shouldn't have invested, and the other person's like, well, stay on the course, and the market goes up and now, hey, we should cash in and do something else. Or you hear the great stories about someone bought a property 2 years ago, now it's tripled in value. And it's like, why not us? And all those stories. And I often say to clients, you can ask a buyer's agent, a financial planner, a mortgage broker, listen to the media, two sets of parents, friends, family, and other investors, and you've got 10 sets of conflicting advice about how to buy maybe that first or second investment property. So you can understand why people get overwhelmed or stuck, or that ability to make a decision and move on, because one's saying buy in a trust, or one's saying buy through an SPSF, or one's saying buy brand new, or one's saying buy regional, and one saying, well, buy a house or buy a unit. So you can understand that it can be quite overwhelming for an investor to shut out that noise as well, isn't it?
I guess most people have got a vested interest. The media, They're not there to educate you. Their vested interest is to get you to click on the links to actually sell. They've already sold your eyeballs to their advertisers, so they want to get you there. There's the property marketers. And at the moment, there's a whole new range of very enthusiastic, well-intentioned, but inexperienced buyer's agents who there's a course to be able to do this, and they just, they're missing out on the perspective. So I think buyer's agents have got a very important role. Our team is probably one of the most active buyer's agencies in Australia, but they're actually fulfilling the order that's been put by the property strategist. So be careful who you're getting advice from, even if they're enthusiastic. Buyer's agents in Melbourne will almost only tell you to invest in Melbourne because they don't know Sydney, they don't know Brisbane. And if they fly in and fly out and say that they do, they don't have the perspective that the on-the-ground people do. So I guess a final lesson is be careful. Not everybody's on your side.
No, sage advice. Thank you very much. Michael, it's been such a privilege to have a chat. We could literally chat for hours about.
We only just started.
I'm sure we're going to get you back on because there's a lot of unfinished business, and I'm sure we'll get a lot of comments and a lot of feedback because not only do you have a great reputation, but you have lived and breathed this for such a long time through so many cycles in the market, and it's a testament to where you are now that staying the course and staying true to the strategy reaps rewards and dividends well into the future, not the short-term sugar hit as well.
Thank you. So,
thank you very much for your time. It's been a real pleasure and a privilege to have a chat, Michael.
Following on from my chat with Aaron Christie Davies, you've learned that most property investors fail. They fail to develop the financial independence they were hoping for because only 1% of property investors, just over 20,000 in Australia, own 6 or more properties. You can't develop the financial freedom. You can't have the choices in life with just 1 or 2 investment properties. Well, not unless you own a Westfield shopping centre, and that's probably not likely. So what can you do to even the odds? Now, what can you do to stack the odds in your favour? And my suggestion is getting my team at Metropole to help you because, as I've explained, our clients are 7.3 times more likely to own 6 or more properties. Well, that's what an independent audit recently showed. Go to metropole.com.au and you'll find that we don't sell property, which means we can give independent and we can give holistic advice because we have a wealth advisory service, financial planning, property management, renovations, development. But it all starts by putting a strategic plan together and then letting our buyer's agents help you. If you're in business or a professional, we even have business advisory. Go to metropole.com.au and let's make this a great year because moving forward in 2022, the market's not going to be as strong as last year. It can't have that growth. That sort of growth was unsustainable. We're also heading into a two-tier property market, as you've heard me speak about before. So we want to make sure that you don't make the mistakes that a lot of investors make. So whether you're a beginner and want to get it right, or whether you're along your journey and you want to make sure you're heading in the right direction and you want to correct any mistakes that you've made, prevent any errors along the way, and improve your results, get my team at Metropole on your side, metropole.com.au. Find out about what we do. Leave us your details, and I look forward to being part of your wealth creation journey.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
There are a number of definitions of wealth. True wealth isn't really how many properties you've got, or how much money you've got, or how big your business is. But in my mind, it's what you're left with when they take all your money away. It's your health, it's your family, it's your friends, your spirituality, your contribution to society, your ability to be grateful. Now, I know I talk a lot about money in this podcast and success, but to me, true wealth isn't about money, as it's about those things I just mentioned. Of course, money's important in those areas in life where it's important, but it's not at all important in other areas of your life. Now, another definition of wealth that I read about is it's got to do with your time freedom. Robert Kiyosaki said there's a big difference between being wealthy and being rich, and I'm sure he's right. See, being rich doesn't mean you're wealthy. In fact, according to Robert Kiyosaki, the rich may have a lot of money, but they've generally got to keep working hard to earn it because they spend most of it. On the other hand, the wealthy, they've got money without having to work too hard for it, and their money covers all their expenses. Usually they've worked hard to get to the point where they've got a substantial business venture or property portfolio that covers their expenses. You've heard me say it before, unless you're making money while you're asleep, you'll never be wealthy. So the difference between the rich and the wealthy is the wealthy don't have to worry about money, while the rich do, because they generally spend most of what they earn because they have not quarantined enough of their cash aside to invest in income-producing assets. In fact, Kiyosaki believes that the definition of wealth is how long you can financially survive without working and still being able to maintain your living standard. So think about it. How long could you survive? Let's say your monthly expenses are, I don't know, $7,000 and you've got $30,000 in savings. Your wealth is therefore, I don't know, about 4.2 months or 128 days. So you can see how in one way wealth could be measured in time, not dollars. So I guess the question is, how do you become wealthy? Well, interestingly, in Australia and in most of Western countries where this podcast is listened to, and I know it's listened to all over the world, at the end of the day, a lot of people can become rich because they're smart or they've got professional jobs. But the problem is a lot of them don't have the financial literacy to make their money work hard for them. So every time they get a pay rise or get a promotion, instead of investing their windfall, instead of investing it in assets, they buy a new car or get a bigger house or renovate their house. And before you know it, their expenses have risen up to meet their new incomes. And that's going to continue to happen throughout their working lives. Interestingly, the wealthy do the opposite. They ensure they're always investing a portion of their income in some way, whether it's in real estate, in shares, in some income-producing assets that grow in value. They've also done the required research. They gathered a team of professionals around them to ensure that their investments are the very best ones for the financial goals that they've set for themselves, because one day they want to become wealthy. So they've put a strategy together to get there. They also don't want to spend the rest of their lives chasing their tails because their income disappears as fast as they've earned it. They'd rather be making their money work for them rather than the other way around. So the bottom line is, if you think about it, the rich are really poor because all they've got is money. On the other hand, the wealthy have a lot more than just money. Now, having said that, any problem that money can solve isn't really a problem. So why not set yourself up for more of it? However, only a small percentage of the population is ever going to be a self-funded retiree, because there are very few of them with the financial intelligence to invest wisely during their working lives. The majority of people just spend the income that they've got during their peak earning years on the latest mod cons, exotic holidays, flash cars, latest technology, because they don't know the difference between being rich and being wealthy. And nowhere is that more important than when you're approaching your twilight years, and all of a sudden we come across clients all the time at Metropole who realize that they've got very little to show for the millions of dollars they've made in their lifetime. Think about it. On the average wage, if you multiply that out over 10, 15, 20 years, especially as a couple, you will have had millions and millions of dollars go through your hands. Where is it today? Are you rich or are you wealthy? I hope you got some benefit from my chat with Aaron Christie Davies. Now you're going to be well on your way to be part of that 1% of community of property investors who build a portfolio of six or more properties. And if you did get some ideas, some tips, some hints, I'd really appreciate it if you tell just one person about the Michael Yardney podcast and join me in my quest to help as many people as possible become financially fluent. There's a share button on every podcast app. You can leave a review wherever you're listening to this podcast. Or why not just tell somebody about it? That'd be great. That would help me. I'd be ever so grateful. I'll be back real soon. But if you want to catch me between podcasts, please chase me on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney, or go to Facebook and join my private Facebook group, the Property Update private Facebook group. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?